Good afternoon, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. 24 years ago, the City of Redondo Beach – I'm sorry, Michael W. Webb, Redondo Beach City Attorney, appearing on behalf of appellants. 24 years ago, the City of Redondo Beach, trying to deal with, after several years of extreme difficulty in dealing with traffic issues caused by persons soliciting employment from the highway or roadway or selling certain products, and in trying to deal with it in a constitutional manner, copied, word for word, an ordinance that had been approved by this Court some 8 months before. Here we are now, 24 years later. We're in our pushing our seventh year of litigation in the city defending itself on a facial challenge of the very ordinance that this Court approved and that has been approved several times.
But was the ordinance amended at any point?
Yes, it was. It was subsequently amended to add a B section to make certain that it applied equally to both the employer and then the employee of solicitation. It also made some non-substantive changes.
But moreover, we're now in an en banc court, so it's fairly irrelevant, actually.
In terms of the Court has even en banc as recently as fewer than 18 months ago recognized the validity of the Acorn decision, and the Acorn decision was quite properly decided that this is a proper time, place, and manner restriction. The
that was quite different, though, wasn't it? The Acorn case, that was really a situation where people were running out to the cars asking for contributions. The driver had to reach in his or her wallet, get the money, give it to them, take any change back, and the like. Moreover, it was an as-applied a challenge, was it not?
It was both. It was both as-applied to the taxpayers, but they also asked for the Court to determine that the ordinance was unconstitutional on its face, overbroad, and the Court in Acorn specifically indicated that it was not, just as this Court in Bonk indicated that it was a content-neutral ordinance.
You contend, I gather, this is content-neutral, right?
Absolutely. Even the district court at the lower level agreed that it was content-neutral. This Court's in Acorn has indicated it's, in the cases since approving Acorn, that it's content-neutral. And this Court, speaking in Bonk in Berger, in June of 2009, indicated that it's content-neutral.
Are A and B any different, though? The language is, B isn't an entire flip side to A.
B
is more limited as to certain activity as to the employers.
Correct. And I think it's because the city was trying to address the actual problem that the city was having. It was an equity situation, so that if there was a situation where the employee is violating the ordinance, the employer is as well.
Wouldn't the traffic issue be completely dealt with?
Sorry.
Wouldn't the traffic issue be completely dealt with by subsection B? In other words, people could chat all they want on the sidewalk, but if nobody can stop and park their car, then there's no traffic problem, correct?
You need both.
Why?
Well, for two reasons. One is it's limited more specifically to the employers who are reacting to the solicitation or trying to hire work. It doesn't.
What difference does that make? If the problem that the city is experiencing is a slowdown of traffic, people stopping, blocking the streets, then why isn't it a complete answer to tell them not to stop and block the street?
Well, in the original memo from the then city attorney, they addressed not only the issue of the employees soliciting work, it also talked about people who were selling items from the median and other areas of the street. The B would not cover that subsection. And again, we're trying to address the actual concern we have. We don't have numbers of cars going to look for people to give donations to or going
but,
to
but
look.
But how is there a problem at all if somebody pulls up and parks a car legally and comes to talk to somebody? And
well,
somebody comes up and talks to them, which happens in all manner of interactions aside from these.
It has never been enforced or interpreted that it applies to people who are parking legally, and certainly
– Well, first of all, it doesn't say that. And second of all, B certainly seems to apply to that.
And again, B has – as the record has shown, it was never, ever applied to people who are parking legally. As a practical matter, where these things have occurred are areas where it's very, very busy.
I mean, one of my overall reactions to this case is, why didn't you write the ordinance to cover what you wanted it to cover instead of all manner of other things?
We did write it to cover specifically what the issues were. And
no,
and
but you're covering people who are parked legally. You're covering all the whole city, even though you seem to be interested in two intersections or two streets. You're covering people who are, as I understand it, who are standing on the sidewalk saying, you know, go around the corner and buy something. You're covering all manner of things that are not what you say your problem is.
If I could address that in two parts. First, we're not covering the people who say go around the park and come
by. Why? It's not soliciting to stand there and say, I have cars for sale right over there, come buy one?
No, it's not. As this court instructed in Acorn, it is not. It is that interaction, it is that immediate exchange that is the solicitation. And again, it's not that we pass the ordinance first.
If I get a mailing in my house that says, please send me some money for a charity, that's not a solicitation?
It's not within the meaning of this ordinance. Again, we adopted this ordinance word for word. And to address the first part of your question, the reason we adopted this ordinance is because we were trying very hard to follow and make certain that we addressed our issue. But
Counsel, you didn't adopt the ordinance word for word. You added the second sentence in A, which is a definition I understand taken from elsewhere in California law, but that was not part of the Arizona law. That provides you with a definition that says that street or highway includes sidewalks.
Well, I would make two points. One is that the Acorn decision specifically indicated that it was presuming that sidewalks was part of that definition in rejecting the facial challenge to the Arizona statute. It did also talk about the fact that the plaintiffs in Acorn had preserved a void for vagueness challenge. So what we were trying to do is, one, by putting it in there, it didn't change anything. It was what the definition of street or highway would have been, what it was in Arizona, what it is in California. It was giving greater notice to people what it covered. But it had no change, because specifically in footnote 9 and on the last page of the Acorn decision, it specifically presumed, for purposes of rejecting the facial challenge in Acorn, that it included the sidewalk.
How does the city get the idea that this is content neutral when, in fact, it bans some types of solicitation and permits others? You ban solicitation involving, in quotes, employment, business, or contributions. But, for example, you don't ban moral support. You don't ban people asking for your vote. You don't ban people asking for directions. Isn't that a content-specific, content-based ordinance rather than a content-neutral ordinance?
Well, it was, we get the idea from this court again.
You don't ever want to do that.
Not only in Acorn, but in Berger specifically, this court indicated that this is a content neutral, and even below the district court indicated it was content neutral, because we're looking at the act of solicitation. Unlike the ACLU case or unlike the Berger case, which this court specifically distinguished the ordinance in Seattle from the ordinance here, the ordinance in Acorn, it was the act of solicitation that we banned, not.
But relied on Acorn and the ordinance that was approved in Acorn, but now sitting en banc, Acorn is up for grabs. Is there any interpretation, any narrowing interpretation of the ordinance that the city has done or that a state court has done, other than just your declaration or other declarations about how it's interpreted?
Well, and again, in terms of how it's been enforced, it's only been in areas that affect traffic specifically.
Yeah, but is there any sort of formal interpretation like administrative guidelines or agency guidelines?
No, there are not specific agency guidelines. I think, again, what we were following is the precedent in terms of to address the earlier comment, the reason it doesn't cover why it doesn't cover the holding up the sign or even passing out the specific handbills is that specifically that has been determined by this court not to be included within this ordinance.
So if Acorn was wrongly decided, then where does that put you?
We believe Acorn was properly decided, but under the same standards, it's still a proper time, place, and manner restriction. As this court spoke en banc, it's content neutral. It's clearly addressed to a substantive.
How would it be narrowly tailored, though, in terms of that, including the sidewalks? And that concerns me.
Well, again, it's only the sidewalks in the way, in the manner in which it affects traffic. So holding up the sign saying, you know, talk to me, holding up a sign, park legally, handing flyers to an occupant of a vehicle clearly aren't covered. What we're talking
about.
But
why is that? Because the language is very broad. I mean, absent Acorn, you have broad language that would cover any solicitation anywhere in the city from the sidewalk to perhaps a legally parked car. There's nothing in the plain text that limits it. So help me understand how I find the narrower interpretation that addresses the traffic disruption issue.
Well, and again, it's we were relying on Acorn and the analysis in Acorn in terms of what was covered in solicitation.
Aside from the fact that that's not, as we've now said about four right. times, not terribly helpful, I don't know even know where you're getting that in Acorn. Acorn was dealing with that situation, and that's why it was dealing with the situation. That was a circumstance in which people were going into traffic to solicit for money on the spot, and therefore that's what the case covered. But why you think that it said that that's what the statute was limited to, that's what I don't understand.
Well, without going into in terms of the analysis of it as of Acorn, when it looked at what specifically is the action, it just as when you look at in terms of Berger, what we're talking about is the need for an immediate exchange. It's different holding up the sign saying, come
well, that would be maybe a perfectly valid statute, but it doesn't look like the ones you have here.
But it is the one we adopted based on what this court said it meant. So it's not that we created an ordinance and then a lower court said, here's the ways to be interpreted. We took what this court said this ordinance meant. We've enforced this ordinance in the manner in which this court said it was to be enforced.
Well, you maybe didn't get a chance to totally answer Judge Bybee's question. But it's of some interest to me that this really isn't the same statute. B was not in the Acorn statute, correct?
That is correct.
And B is not anywhere, any place in B we're talking about business or contributions. We're only talking about employment, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So B is really regulating then only one particular activity.
It was regulating the activity that was...
No, to answer my question. So it really only regulates one activity, hire or hires for employment, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Now, if that's so, then I guess I'm having a tough trouble why I shouldn't throw B out based on what the Supreme Court said in Carey v. Brown, which again dealt with employment, dealt with this time an exemption for employment, but the Supreme Court suggested that it violated the Equal Protection Clause because it discriminated between lawful and unlawful conduct, accorded preferential treatment to the expression concerning one particular subject, labor disputes. Which seems to be exactly where we are here, employment, only one particular issue. So why is then B not unconstitutional?
Again, the city was trying to specifically address the realistic concern. There isn't that was presented to it in terms of you don't have, they were trying to do, make
well,
it
I understand
fair,
what the city was trying to do, but that isn't the issue here. The issue here is now content neutral.
and now the city has not acted, which is limited to several different things like business or contributions or employment, which may pass under Hill. But now as to the B part, it focused in only on employment. And Kerry seems to be right on all fours.
Well, I would think under Hill, given the fact that we're focused on the act of the solicitation and we're focused on the actual practical matter of what the city, I don't believe, is required to come up with every theoretical situation presented to it. It was trying to come up with specifically a way to have it enforced in an equitable manner between both the employees and the employers.
But the bottom line, following up on Judge Smith's question, is that you don't ban all solicitations. You ban those related to business. You don't ban it for voting. You don't ban it for Girl Scout cookie solicitations. You don't ban somebody soliciting people to come join a book club. It's just for employment. And under those circumstances, is this not a content-based ordinance rather than a content-neutral ordinance for constitutional analysis purposes?
Well, I think that the under Hill, you can go through broad grounds like that. And, again, you're looking at the action that we're regulating, not the content of it. So I believe under Hill we're able to do that. I think also when you look at it, it's not the mere hypothetical situation.
But it does have to be practical, doesn't it, counsel? I mean, Berger, in Berger we indicated that Acorn was to be narrowly construed, right? Do you
correct
agree with that? Okay. So if you take that as narrowly construed, and then you get to the point that Judge Smith pointed out, and the Judge Vibey and others, you get this Part B, which is new. It's not part of the Acorn situation, and you've also added a little bit to the A part as well. So we don't have the identical statute, and that indeed in and of itself changes the ballgame, because you've got the employment focus, and you deal with the sidewalk issue and the like. I know that in Acorn there was an assumption about the sidewalk, but this expressly states the sidewalk, and it really kind of changes the ballgame, because in Acorn you have people running out to the cars right into the middle of traffic and exchanging money, whereas here so many things. I live in Manhattan Beach, so I know about Redondo Beach. It's a very nice town, and people are friendly and all that sort of thing. A lot of things happen on the sidewalk that have absolutely nothing to do with what they had in Acorn. So I'm puzzled as to why the city is so obdurate in its refusal to take the fact that this is a content-based ordinance. It is a restrictive ordinance. It bans some solicitation, but not all solicitations. Do you agree with that?
I don't agree with it specifically as to the A section, because of the fact that this court has held content neutral. This court talked again specifically about the immediate exchange, and in Berger it cited concurrence. From Justice Kennedy, and it talked about the nature of how that immediate exchange.
If the interpretation, if you're regarding what we said in Acorn and in Berger as an interpretation of solicitor, then isn't the major circumstance that you're trying to cover outside of it? In other words, you're trying to deal with people who are trying to get themselves hired as daily workers. There's no money exchanged, right?
It was both. When you look at the original memo from the city attorney,
right,
it referred
but
to both.
In fact, the enforcement that triggered this lawsuit involved people who were not, in fact, exchanging money. Is that right?
Well, again, this is a facial challenge that this ordinance has been enforced many years, many times over the years.
It would be helpful if you answered my question. Is that true?
It's not true because of the fact that I don't believe the immediate exchange necessarily has to be the immediate exchange of money.
Well, it wasn't Berger and it wasn't Acorn and it wasn't Lee. And they all talk about the fact that physically transferring the money is what makes it conduct and not speech. Is that right?
But it's the immediate exchange that is because the problem is
what's the exchange? It's an exchange of words. Do you want to work for me? Yes, I'll work for you.
Right. And that's exactly it. It's a negotiation. It's something. It's not the mere. It's why the leafleting is perfectly appropriate. It's why you can go up to a car and say, park here, pull in here, hire me, here's my cell phone. Whatever it is that you that is protected, it's just that exchange, the in terms of whether it be in employment where it's that negotiation, I will pay X amount for this amount. The, you know, I'll, I
so
want X number of hours.
So somebody goes up and gives them a car and says, here's my cell phone. And I want to work for you, that's okay.
Yes, it is. It is absolutely okay. It's, and again, that goes back to, it's similar to that immediate exchange of money. It's the exchange, the negotiations, if it applies to the solicitation for employment or the solicitation.
How do these transactions normally take place, if you know? So there'll be a bunch of guys hanging around. And somebody who needs a day labor or a number of day laborers swings by, and what happens next?
And so normally you'd have a group of day laborers congregating. You'd have a car that would pull up. It stops in traffic. The day laborers approach the vehicle and solicit employment from the motor vehicle, and that has been the typical from the enforcement. You'd have the solicitation.
What happens next? Do they get in the car and
yes.
drive away?
Yes.
So this is sort of a pickup place. So you strike a deal, and if the deal is mutually satisfactory, one or more people get into the car, and you take them to do the work for you, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, you had a question early on, and either you didn't give an answer or I just missed it. Why isn't that entire transaction simply regulable by cops standing there and saying anytime anybody stops, they give them a ticket?
It's very labor intensive. It clearly didn't work. That's what the city first tried for several years. And even at the lower court, when that question came up, there was a comment from counsel that
it must not be any more labor intensive to arrest people on the sidewalk, or any less labor intensive to arrest people on the sidewalk than it is to give tickets to people, pulling up in cars. My guess is it's easier to get the car than to, you know, a guy on the sidewalk could run away. It's much harder with a car. You've got a license plate and, right? I'm just not sure what
4 years the city did try and you looked at. It was.
And Redondo Beachians scoff laws when it comes to parking?
It wasn't so much the parking. It was that it just didn't work to enforce the ordinance. It was very labor intensive that if you didn't stay there, that the people would continue to congregate. You'd have employers continue to come to that location. And the city tried several things. It's not a hypothetical as the other side has posed that this would work. It did not work. The city tried several different attempts.
Standing on a sidewalk by a legal parking space and having the employer stopping at a legal parking space and having somebody go up and talk to them, is that a violation of the ordinance?
That is not a violation of the ordinance. It's never been enforced that way.
So therefore, all you have is a bunch of people who are illegally stopping their cars. Or going out into the middle of the street. And what? How is it different to enforce that than to enforce the rule against people asking them to do that? I'm really baffled.
Again, part of it is the
standing on the sidewalk is not a problem.
Standing on the sidewalk is not a problem.
So how is this enforcement any different than simply enforcing don't stop in a, you can't park, stop in an illegal place?
Well, as a practical matter, they're different in terms of sentencing, in terms of how that you can get probation for the one, you can get stay away orders for the one, you can have a situation where it can be controlled. The city has no control over the vehicle code issues, notwithstanding being a charter city.
And but so you also have an ordinance that prohibits people from standing in the roadway if it interferes with the movement of traffic. So you already have an enforceable ordinance to deal with the employee sign, don't you?
And again, in terms of looking at a facial challenge, it's not the least restrictive means that the city could come up with. It's a question of whether or not this is something that was narrowly tailored. We believe it is narrowly tailored to promote that significant government issue. And as a practical matter, given the fact that you've had, you know, 24 years of history, that this was the one ordinance that was successful. It was enforced in terms of complaints from citizens. It would be enforced, the problem would disappear, and then you would have a few years later a new round. The only thing that was different here is that in 2004, you ended up with a facial challenge to this ordinance that is before the court now.
Mr. Webber.
Seriously challenging standing?
Yes.
In a 28-J letter?
We wanted to point out the Lake Forest case that this court has decided, and it is virtually identical to this case.
You really didn't make that argument that's out in the 28-J letter to the district court, did you?
We did. It was prior to the Lake Forest decision. We did object to standing throughout this.
You objected to standing, but I didn't see any place, reading the record pretty carefully, that you argued to the district court or to us before we got that case anything about the fact you shouldn't be allowed to talk about standing on summary judgment if you didn't put it in your complaint.
Well, and again, that's an issue where the plaintiffs have the burden of proof.
But just a minute, counsel, you're not answering my question. I understand they have the burden of proof, but we now are not on standing itself. We're talking about procedures to get to whether you can challenge standing. And I understand that in order to have a procedure to challenge standing, somebody ought to make it to the poor DJ, having been in his position once before, and he ought to be able to rule on it, or somebody ought to get it before us. Now, there we got a new case, and it may be great, but if the district judge didn't get a chance to look at it, and neither did we before this case comes out, then why should I make that the issue here? That's the question, not whether they have standing or not, because they have enough in their declarations for summary judgment to make standing.
But we did object to standing throughout. They did not plead the type of standing that they proposed to submit to this court or to the district court in terms of proof standing. And so, therefore, since the Lake Forest case says you can't at that later date fix improper pleading by adding the declaration.
Since we came with a case after what we did that now supports us, we're going to throw that at you, even though we didn't make the argument to the poor DJ?
But we did make the argument. We have tried throughout to preserve the issue of standing. We clearly objected to the district judge in terms of the issue of standing, that the standing was not proved.
Well, frankly, then, are you suggesting if I find standing based on the declarations of NDLON, as did the three-judge panel, that I really haven't got to address any other question relating to standing? Because the three-judge panel looked very good at the declarations that have been filed, and they looked at the complaint. And based on the declarations and the complaint, they found standing. Now you're throwing a new curve at us, which is, it isn't enough to say it in summary judgment. You've got to say it in your complaint. But I didn't argue that to anybody else, but you should still throw somebody out on standing based on this new idea.
Well, we would fall back on the fact the plaintiff has the burden of proving standing. They have the burden of filing the complaint. We've objected to standing throughout this case and have preserved that issue.
You have about a minute left.
I have a minute.
For a button?
Yes, please.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. We'll hear from appellees.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Thomas Sines, and I represent the plaintiffs appellees in this matter. This action relates to a Redondo Beach ordinance that was adopted some 24 years ago. As this case went along, Redondo Beach added a contention that despite the plain language of this ordinance, its only effort was to bar that solicitation that resulted in a car stopping in traffic. Now, that concern which they brought up in this litigation could have been easily addressed through existing laws against jaywalking, against obstructing traffic, against illegally stopping. But instead, they put together and adopted an ordinance modeled on.
But they say they tried it, it's not adequate. That's what they say.
Yes, but of course they put nothing in the record that would indicate why it's not adequate. And as you know, Your Honor, one of the tests that they have to satisfy to render this ordinance constitutional is that it's narrowly tailored to serve a significant government interest. The first test that's been articulated by the Supreme Court for determining
but
if there is.
Narrowly tailored doesn't mean that it has to be the narrowest way of doing it or that there isn't some better way of achieving the same end.
That's correct. You have to be able to demonstrate, prove, because it is the burden of the city, that its aims could not be achieved less effectively absent the regulation. Well, they've asserted that, but I don't think there's anything in the record or anything in logic to explain why, if your concern is about.
Say we tried it the other way, it didn't work.
Well, I have to say, Your Honor, 24 years later, there are still day laborers on the streets of Redondo Beach, so it appears that this ordinance doesn't work either. And since you're comparing the two of them, the question is, could they have achieved their objective without regulating speech?
I mean, you say that. Is that in the record? I don't know what there is in Redondo Beach.
Well, what's in the record?
I didn't see anyone. I drove through there this morning.
Well, to the airport. There are day laborers there. They have been there. They're the ones who brought this case as a result of enforcement action that was undertaken by the city of Redondo Beach when the case was commenced. They are still there. They are there because there is a demand for the services that they provide. This is an exchange between both a willing employer and a willing employee.
Mr. Sines, yes. Let's say, just I'm hypothetically, let's say that I think that the case was correctly decided by the three-judge panel if ACORN is good law. Tell me why ACORN isn't good law and why, you know, what would the U.S. Supreme Court, how would they decide this case? Should we take ACORN off the table? That makes it better for you?
I think that ACORN is a decision that is no longer good law, and I think this Court should say that. Nonetheless, I think that there are distinctions between this ordinance and the one in ACORN that even if ACORN remained good law, would render this ordinance still unconstitutional.
ACORN is no longer good law as to the facts of ACORN or because the ordinance is broader than the facts of ACORN.
I think the ordinance, both in ACORN and in this case, in covering solicitation of business and contributions, is broader than what was directly addressed by that panel. They were dealing with tagging, the solicitation of money.
Right. So as to tagging, is ACORN good? As to the particular facts of ACORN.
Sure. I think there the Supreme Court has made clear, if you're talking about solicitation for an immediate exchange of money, that's content neutral.
In the middle of the street with a really worse traffic problem.
That's content neutral. Well, and as content neutral.
What's so different about having somebody step into your car? That's an immediate transaction there, too. You don't actually put out cash, but surely the cash is not what was the key in ACORN. It was the fact that you had an immediate transaction, immediate exchange. And if the way these transactions work is that you have a negotiation and there's a consequence, somebody steps into the car, why isn't that equivalent?
Well, in fact, the way this occurs, Your Honor, there's no negotiation. You say you need workers, they get in the car, you tend to negotiate at the work site. So it's fairly immediate, you get in the car and drive on, first of all.
Well,
second.
There it is. So how is that different from pulling out money and handing it to having somebody get in your car? Both of them involve the need to have the vehicle stationary long enough for it to occur. Both of them require some sort of communication between the parties. I don't see what the difference is.
I think there are two differences that are important. First, I think the Supreme Court has discussed, as well as a discussion in ACORN itself, that exchanging money often is a longer transaction. Person first has to decide, person standing in front of me is asking me to donate to this. Do I want to give to that? I take out the money or the credit card.
I bet you that if we had a race, I could put out a dollar a lot faster than you can load a couple of people in your car.
I take that bet, Your Honor.
They just don't strike me as being that different.
I take that bet, but I think the second important distinction is if they really were interested in targeting anything.
It would be close anyway, wouldn't it?
It would be close.
It would be close. So it doesn't matter who. I mean, the point is they're really equivalent.
But, of course, what the Supreme Court described and what was described in Acorn is that that's not typical. Ordinarily, the person has to decide, do I support that cause? Do I have the right change or do I want change back? Will I write a check? Will I give them a credit card? That was what was described by the Supreme Court in the solicitation of funds cases.
Are you discussing this because of the content neutrality issue or because of the narrow targeting issue? Because with regard to the second, it seems to me that you're leaving out the key fact of Acorn, which is it was in the middle of this traffic flow.
Yes. I'm discussing it right now, Your Honor, with respect to content neutrality.
I see.
With respect to narrow tailing, there are significant differences, both between what happened in Acorn and in the kinds of cases that I found in narrow tailoring. But I think the other critical distinction is that if the city of Redondo Beach, in this case, were interested in stopping anything that involved an exchange, it could have done that more explicitly. Because there are solicitations that involve exchanges in the roadway that are not barred by this ordinance. And that's because they've limited it to employment, business, and contributions.
Can I just, following up on Judge Berzon's point, and indeed the Chief's point, he asked how these transactions take place. And from what I understand, the people in the cars come there for the express purpose of hiring
that's
the day laborers. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Because that's what the B ordinance, the B part of the ordinance is for, right?
That's right.
And that's not part of Acorn, right?
That's
Acorn
correct.
Acorn has no such equivalent situation.
There are two parts of this ordinance that were not in Acorn. The B portion that has to do with employers who park, and the definition of street or highway in A that covers sidewalks, curbs, medians, et cetera.
Right. So the reality is that at the very least, Acorn is really distinguishable for the B part, because here, this is every bit as much the, in quotes, fault of the proposed employers as it is of the proposed employees, is it not?
Yes, that's correct.
I don't mean to use the term fault in the majority sense. What I mean is these people volitionally come to the place for the purpose of hiring the Hornaletto.
Yes, there's a willing employer, a willing employee. Both of them are involved in this exchange. They're both at the site when it occurs. I agree that Acorn is distinguishable, even if it were to remain good law, largely because of the distinctions that we've identified.
That's an interesting distinction, and certainly true, but it seems to me it cuts against you.
I'm sorry, why is that, Your Honor?
Well, it seems to me that that makes it much more of a business transaction. I mean, the guy who's driving along and all of a sudden somebody stops, knocks on the window and says, give me a dollar because I'm hungry, really is just there to be stopped at a traffic light. When you've got both sides there to engage in commercial transaction, this suggests that this is a marketplace. This suggests that this is a kind of activity where there's commercial intent on both sides, and therefore the ability to regulate by the government is much higher.
There is a higher ability to regulate commercial speech.
I mean, that's why it cuts against you, right?
It potentially cuts against us.
Okay,
but
there we
go. A couple
go.
Of points first. The city of Redondo Beach has never attempted to defend this as a regulation of commercial speech. It would be difficult for them to do that because their own law includes contributions among the solicitations that are banned.
Yeah, I didn't say commercial speech. It's a commercial activity. I mean, it's a marketplace, which raises all of the problems that you have when you have a organized marketplace.
Yes, it is a marketplace that could be regulated.
You have traffic congestion. You have, competitive behavior. You know, I don't know what how the people on the sidewalk decides who gets the next potential client, whether there's any life involved in that. But my guess is there's some of that.
This case would be an entirely different case if we were here talking about a regulation of that marketplace. We are talking about a regulation of speech that covers not only this transaction, but also any solicitation of business, any solicitation of contributions. We're talking about an attempt by a city that is not trying to regulate this marketplace, as they've admitted in this litigation.
That anybody has been stopped for this violating this ordinance that wasn't involved in precisely this kind of transaction? I mean, have they arrested a lot of Girl Scouts? Have there been a lot of political I mean, you know, is there any indication that this has been applied in practice to anything except this very kind of commercial transaction?
Certainly there's nothing in the record that indicates there has been enforcement as to any other kind of speech.
You have to use an overbreadth analysis or analysis suggests, well, you know, it's okay as to us, but, you know, there are all these other people being regulated. And that's a very sort of dangerous, precarious position to take.
Of course, I think that there are strong arguments for why day laborer speech in this case, as we've been discussing, this regulation is unconstitutional specifically as to that speech. However, it is certainly true that there is a danger with
the parking lot, right?
I'm sorry?
This could be conducted in a parking lot off the street altogether.
It could if the owner of the parking lot permitted it to occur there.
Or if somebody paid him to, right?
Paid the owner of the parking lot? Yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, this is not something that inherently has to be done. It's not like a parade or a demonstration or anything like that where you inherently have to use a public street or park. This is something that could easily be done if just enough money is thrown at it, done in a empty stadium, in a basketball court when it's not being used for that purpose, one of those outdoor theaters that no longer exist, right? It all could be done there.
Certainly, and so could demonstrations and so could parades, but they don't occur in parking lots or stadiums.
Parades are different because parades are supposed to be in your face and demonstrations are supposed to be in your face. The very point is to have them be there and disrupting traffic and be seen when people go about their daily business. There's nothing about this transaction that would be diminished in any way if the location of the transaction were not sort of in the middle of traffic, if it were in a parking lot a couple of blocks away where nobody except the participants are present, right?
With a parade and a demonstration and with day labor, it's a matter of reaching your intended audience, the folks who you want to get your message to.
Would you have us do with the fact that the actual enforcement patterns do seem to be quite limited, although there's no written interpretation or limiting construction?
What I would have the court do is direct the city of Redondo Beach to write the ordinance that it wants to enforce, that it indicates it has been enforcing.
And what about Chief Judge Kaczynski's suggestion that you then have to meet overbreadth standards, and how do you do that exactly? Why do you argue that you meet overbreadth standards? Do you meet overbreadth standards?
We do meet overbreadth standards.
For overbreadth purposes, so they haven't actually enforced it otherwise?
Your Honor, the danger of chilling speech comes in reading what the ordinance says. I don't know why Girl Scouts are not on the streets selling cookies in Redondo Beach. I don't know why or whether they are.
They may be there and not being enforced, or they may not be there. We don't know
which
it is.
Exactly.
They don't know which it is. That's why.
That could be true, too. But I would point out that this applies to all of Redondo Beach, even side streets that aren't very busy, residential streets and the like. If you read the ordinance itself, it would apply in those circumstances.
There are no instances of Girl Scouts standing on street corners selling cookies before the ordinance, right? That the record reflects.
I honestly don't know, but it's certainly not in the record that they were there before 1980.
This is another hypothetical. If the court were to find that the language was content neutral, but that it was not narrowly tailored, would this court have to revisit Acorn and Berger?
With respect to narrow tailoring, no, I don't believe so, Your Honor. I think if you look at the standards for narrow tailoring, starting with what I mentioned previously, can the city's objectives be achieved without regulating speech? The answer is clearly yes.
Well, what resolution would require revisiting Berger and would create a tension with Berger?
I don't see anything in this case that would create a tension with Berger, Your Honor. I think that with respect to all elements of the test, content neutrality, I think that Berger is consistent with this case, except to the extent that it is read, I think overread, as saying that Acorn actually blesses an ordinance that goes beyond what Acorn itself said by covering sidewalks. I think that with respect to narrow tailoring, Berger is correct, and the standards that are articulated there applied here. would render this ordinance unconstitutional. And with respect to alternative avenues of communication, that is an independent reason why the Redondo Beach ordinance should be held unconstitutional.
Exactly why do you think this is not content neutral? Is it because you don't think solicitation is limited to the exchange of money? Is it because this isn't the exchange of money? Is it because it's limited to employment, business, and contributions and not other things? Or exactly what?
It's all of the above. You start with the fact that when you look at it, it does not cover all speech. At a certain level, all speech is solicitation. If I'm performing, I'm asking for your approval. If I'm asking for your vote, I'm soliciting your vote. If I'm asking for your signature on a petition, I'm soliciting your signature. Every kind of speech is a solicitation. So with respect to the broad category of speech, this singles out particular content, that solicitation that seeks employment, business, or contributions. By that test, it is content discriminatory.
What do we do with a case like Hill, which said that approaching for three different categories of speech was content neutral, or at least was susceptible to intermediate scrutiny?
I'm going to be completely candid. I think Hill is a difficult case to explain. I think sometimes First Amendment jurisprudence is like a blob with a skeletal structure beneath it, and sometimes as you reveal some of that skeletal structure, other parts of it become obscured. But I think Hill deals with a situation where the specific context, where the specific timing, where the specific parties involved tell you that there is a violation, so you don't actually have to look at what is the content to determine that there is a violation.
We've never held that the officer must read a test is a problem. We've never relied on that. This is content neutral. So it's pretty clear on that point.
What you have said is, I think correctly, that test is evidence but not dispositive as to content discrimination. And that's why I'm distinguishing what happens in Hill, where it's not really closely attending to what is said. It's not picking one of three categories out of dozens, as occurs here.
It's not.
It's only one specific kind of speech in a specific context involving specific parties.
So you're saying
that's the only way I can explain that case.
We should confine Hill to its particular facts, is your recommendation of Hill?
If you have an alternative situation where you can tell from the context, from the parties, from the timing, from the place, that there is a violation, I suppose that would be an outcome dictated by Hill. But other than that, I think Hill is fairly unique when you look at all of the jurisprudence from the Supreme Court about content discrimination.
If we change just a little bit from the content and go to the narrowly tailored situation, if I look at what the Supreme Court says on facial challenges, it seems to me that the Supreme Court is saying that no set of circumstances exists under which the challenged ordinance would be valid, or that the statute lacks any plainly legitimate sweep. It seems to me that your argument is about plainly legitimate sweep. Would you agree?
Yes. And in the First Amendment context, that specifically means is it chilling speech that is legitimate.
Okay. So how do I then look? I mean, I look at Washington State Grange versus the Washington State Republican Party, where it suggests that we generally don't apply this strong medicine of overbreadth analysis, where the parties fail to describe the instances of arguable overbreadth of the contested law. It doesn't seem to me that in this particular situation, that whether we're talking about somebody right in the street or on the sidewalk, that it differs from that particular situation. It's just a hypothetical example of how the government could theoretically apply it, and therefore, why is it then not absolutely narrowly tailored?
I don't think it's entirely theoretical, Your Honor, first of all.
What's not theoretical? What examples from this record, evidence, do I have that it wasn't narrowly tailored?
If a day laborer is standing on the sidewalk, never enters the street, they're in violation of this ordinance.
So, if they do the same thing day laborers do that they're supposed to be not doing, why is that a problem?
If the day laborer is doing what the city concedes is permissible under this ordinance, they still would be violating it. The city contends that a day laborer could stand on the sidewalk, and as long as they somehow indicate, don't pull over illegally, go to a side street, come into the parking lot, and I will meet you there. The city argues that that is not a violation that they would enforce. But under the terms of this ordinance, that is a violation. That day laborer, regardless of how vociferously they indicate, please pull into the parking lot, is still guilty of violating the ordinance as the city has construed it, if that driver stops in the street and ignores the wishes.
That's a nice hypothetical, but I've never seen anybody do that.
I've seen it, Your Honor. I've seen day laborers who want folks to pull over into a parking lot. It does occur.
How do they communicate this to a moving vehicle?
Signaling to pull into the parking lot. Now, they're not always paid attention to. That is sometimes ignored. Folks are in a hurry to hire folks are in a hurry to hire folks.
Let me ask you this. Let's assume for just a moment that this ordinance is content neutral and that it's narrowly tailored. Whether I agree with that's not really relevant here. But we've got the second issue, which is whether the city has met its burden of showing that there are ample alternative channels for communication of information.
Yes.
That's frankly the thing that troubles me the most about this matter. What is there in the record to indicate that there is an alternative means for these folks to express themselves in the city of Redondo Beach?
Your Honor, there's nothing. There's nothing in the record to indicate that there is an alternative means. There is
and
the hypothetical.
Whose burden is it under the constitutional?
It's the city's burden. City's burden.
On a facial challenge, though, I guess I'm puzzled. Do we have to show ample alternative channels for these individuals, this group of day laborers, or do we really have to say, are there any ample alternative channels for soliciting business, employment and contributions generally on a facial challenge? What's our job?
I wish I had a clear answer to that, because I had the same question in my mind as I reviewed the record here, because it seems as though both sides focused on alternative channels for day labor speech. There was no showing as to any other kind of speech whatsoever. So that's why we're confined to what was described here, though I think the city would have a burden of demonstrating that there are alternatives for others as well.
But that obviously depends what live we're operating on. If we're only going to look at the day labor situation and think there's an overbreath problem, then for alternatives, we're going to look at the day labor problem.
Well, I agree. I think that the city ought to be required to show that there are alternatives available
for
all sorts
of speakers.
On the other
hand, if we're going to look at overbreath in general, at the ordinance as written, then one would think that you'd get to narrow tailoring before you get to the alternatives.
Yes. That's correct. But if you get to the alternatives and you focus solely on day laborers, I think that there's nothing in the record that the city has produced to demonstrate an actual alternative channel. And in fact, I think the channel that they've relied upon is inappropriate. Relying on a private property owner to hypothetically provide an alternative channel, I think, is not allowed under this Court and the Supreme Court's precedent.
And there are other municipalities that have attempted to create their own alternatives.
Yes, by creating hiring centers for day laborers.
There's places or
that's correct.
Phone calls or something.
That's correct.
The hiring centers that were referred to in this record, if I recall correctly, were nowhere near the city of Redondo Beach. Is that correct?
That's correct. And I think the city of Redondo Beach's burden is to show alternatives within the city itself. And that's why I think it's inappropriate to rely on private property owners, because that is, in essence, like a different city. They could no more point to Manhattan Beach or Hermosa Beach and say, there's your alternative, as they can point to a private property owner and say, there's your alternative.
So if, for example, there was an ordinance that said that certain street corners were off limits, but just certain street corners.
Then that would leave the alternative of the other street corners, the other areas in the city, and the question would be whether those were realistic alternatives for the speech that's involved. But there was no demonstration of that here, because this is an ordinance that applies to every part of the city of Redondo Beach.
So do you have standing?
Yes. We have standing, both organizational standing, we have representational or associational standing, and overbreath standing.
But your standing wasn't alleged in your complaint.
It was not alleged in the complaint, Your Honor. The organizational standing was not. The representational standing was. I think that was a mistake. I think Lake Forest presents a problem. The distinction here is, as you pointed out, that decision came out after the district judge acted. In this case, unlike in Lake Forest, the district judge here did find that there was organizational standing.
Was Lake Forest correctly decided?
I don't believe it was, Your Honor. I think
you want to tell Judge Kaczynski that?
I think that if the district judge reads the declarations at summary judgment and concludes that there's organizational standing, that gets past you, gets you past the lack of pleading. But I think in this case, because Lake Forest happened afterwards and the district judge did.
What difference would that make, given that standing goes to our Article III powers?
Because I think you have an indication here that the district judge would have allowed an amendment of the complaint.
Even
because the district judge did conclude there was organizational standing.
Even if that weren't the case, wouldn't our remedy be to send it back to the district court, give you an opportunity to amend and address Lake Forest?
Yes. I think that that's the appropriate resolution if our standing comes down to organizational, to let the district judge decide whether she would allow an amendment of the complaint to then consider the evidence that she did consider in concluding on summary judgment that there was organizational standing. But I don't think you get there because we also have representational or associational standing here as well. I think that the only argument that's been put forward by the City of Redondo Beach about the legal right to work is both inapposite and wrong on the law.
Is there anything about subsection – you're challenging subsection B as well as subsection A?
Yes.
How is subsection B – and I guess this is what Chief Judge Kuczynski was asking – how is that a restriction on speech?
It's a restriction on the listeners, the willing listeners. You're taking away the audience of the plaintiffs in this case, and that, as the Supreme Court has stated, essentially takes away their right to free speech. Section B applies even to a legally parked vehicle, whether that's on the major street, a side street, anywhere on the streets of Redondo Beach. So it therefore takes away all listeners except those, potentially, who pull into a private lot in order to engage in the solicitation transaction.
Do you think if they just stopped to hear what this person was saying, that would be attempting to hire them? Wouldn't be hiring them.
It says attempts to hire, both in Section B and attempt to solicit in Section A, although I have to confess I struggle with how either of those would remotely apply given the construction that the city offers up, that this is only about those who cause someone to stop in the street. I don't know how you get an attempt to solicit if you require an actual stop of a vehicle before you conclude that there was a violation of the ordinance. Another reason why I think their proffered construction is too late and inconsistent with the plain language. As this Court has repeatedly concluded, when you have a narrowing construction.
If they were to put out a and when some other of these kinds of cases, there have been enforcement policies that have been written up. If there were such a written-up enforcement policy that was consistent with what they're now saying, i.e., in the street, only if you actually have a transaction, it's only for certain in these two intersections, only with regard to employment, would that be valid?
Well, I think this would be a different case. I think there would still be serious concerns about how consistent that is with the actual language of the ordinance. And the plain language of a law is a particular concern in the First Amendment context because of the danger of chilling. And what you've just described goes well beyond the plain language, both excising certain words and adding words, particularly the restriction to particular intersections when the law as written applies throughout the city of Redondo Beach, I think would be problematic. Obviously, that would be a different case. If that were then to be put into the ordinance itself, that also would be a different case. I think we might still be here arguing about narrow tailoring, specifically about whether the city needs to do anything to regulate speech, given the fact that its concerns could be easily answered by adequately enforcing laws against jaywalking, obstructing traffic, or illegally stopping. But we would certainly be here in a different context than we are today, where we have a plainly worded ordinance applying to the entire city of Redondo Beach that covers sidewalks as well as alleys, medians, and parkways, that covers in subsection B only solicitation of employment, not solicitation of business or contributions. We have an ordinance that is content discriminatory on its face by not covering all solicitations, not covering solicitations, all solicitations that would require a car to stop. This ordinance, for example, would not stop someone soliciting signatures on a petition, whether a petition to qualify a measure for the ballot or a petition to have the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame immediately introduce Britney Spears. No matter what the petition is, if you're seeking that signature from a car, it's not barred by this ordinance, but it is the kind of exchange that they have indicated they have problems with. They've singled out a particular solicitation, rendering it content discriminatory. The narrow tailoring problem has to do with the fact that this could easily be addressed, the concerns.
The Britney Spears thing doesn't happen very often.
It doesn't.
Which is understandable.
It is understandable. It is understandable. But I do think that people circulate petitions about all kinds of matters, both serious and inane, and sometimes they do that in a modern era to drivers. And that's the concern. They've singled out solicitation of a particular kind and not other solicitation that has an equal opportunity, an equal chance to lead to a car stopping illegally in traffic. The narrow tailing problem, the lack of a record of alternative channels, indicates that this Court should conclude that the district court was right, that the Redondo Beach Ordinance is unconstitutional as a violation of the First Amendment. Thank you, Your Honors.
Okay. Thank you. We have about a minute left.
Mr. Webb, I want to ask you about the alternative channels. I'm hoping you can answer the question for me. Do you agree the burden is on the city to show, assuming for a minute contract neutrality and assuming for a minute that narrow tailoring is close enough, we don't have to worry about that. What real ample alternative channels for communication of the information exist under this ordinance for these day laborers?
All the ones that this Court identified in Acorn, the exact same ones in terms of that you can leaflet a car, that you can hold up the sign, all the things that this Court addressed in Acorn in holding that there were proper alternative channels of communication are in effect in this case because, again, the A section is exactly based on that Acorn, that Phoenix statute.
So you get to import Acorn into your record?
In terms of that's always how it's, the record is, shows we've always enforced it consistent with Acorn. And, in fact, the record shows it was I specifically identified that we were seeking to copy this law for
but
use
Acorn
of addressing
was dealing with
our problems.
To a charity.
What?
Acorn was dealing with contributions to a charity as to which the audience is random. And they were trying to reach essentially a random audience. And here you're dealing with wanting to reach particular people, those people who want to hire day laborers. Isn't that an entirely different thing in terms of alternatives?
But in this case, the alternatives still, some of the alternatives I recognize are still appropriate. The leafleting the cars, they pull over here, anything that they wanted to give communication.
So it would be okay to go into the middle of the street with a leaflet and give it to them and say, pull over here?
I'm saying that this ordinance doesn't prohibit that because this Court instructed us before we adopted it. You know, I think that one of the things that counsel mentioned, talking about First Amendment law in terms of it being a blob on top of a skeletal system, the city tried to do exactly what this Court said was okay. And have it always, and the
except,
record shows we've always enforced
the ordinance literally applies to someone who's standing on a sidewalk holding a sign.
But Acorn, this Court said that in Acorn. It said it in footnote 9, and it said it in rejecting the overbreath analysis. And so it us putting it in there did not change whether or not applied to a sidewalk. It did apply to a sidewalk, according to this Court in Acorn, and it applies in our case. The only difference is we took a vagueness challenge away by giving additional notice. The city shouldn't be punished for giving additional notice of something that was specifically in Acorn. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Case is argued. We'll send some of the word.